Hello, everyone, and welcome to Really Old Movies. I'm your host, Harrison Scullin, and today I have a very special guest, Chris Yogerst, author of The Warner Brothers from 2022 and Hollywood Hates Hitler from 2020, and today we'll be discussing the film Underground from 1941. This is a World War II Hollywood propaganda film set between two brothers, Kurt and Eric Franken, played by Jeffrey Lynn and Philip Dorn, and directed by Vincent Sherman, who also directed All Through the Night, Adventures of Don Juan, and this was produced by Warner Brothers. And so with that, let's go ahead and introduce our special guest. How's it going?
Good. Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for coming back on. And so before we get started, Chris, why don't you kind of reintroduce yourself and kind of tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I am a professor at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. I teach a range of communication courses, but my research focus is in film and popular culture history, and specifically in how film and popular culture engage with our surrounding political and social climates, which is why today's film, you know, is of perfect interest to me, because it's the kind of movie that was made, you know, it mirrors its time period. So, and certain arguments of its time period. So that's really where I come in with my interest in, you know, the history of communication and popular culture.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, and last time we kind of talked about in your book, how the Warner Brothers were kind of adamant on making these films. And is my understanding, they're some of the first studios to do so, right? To be kind of anti-Nazi and whatnot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was a couple other efforts early on in, you know, 35, 36, but Warner's was the first studio to start making really blatant anti-authoritarian movies. So movies like Black Legion and They Won't Forget, and the Emile Zola one they did that won some awards. And then by 39, Confessions of a Nazi Spy, of course, and they really kind of broke the dam on that and were, you know, and then since 1933, they were the most vocal anti-Nazi studio as far as like in their private lives. They pulled their product out of Germany as soon as Hitler took over. So they were willing to give up profits to stand against Hitler, which was not an easy thing to do at the, you know, the peak of the Great Depression. So they, yeah, they were very much leading the charge on that. And, you know, right around the beginning of World War II, or really, I mean, as the anti-Nazi threat was being discussed in Hollywood by the late 30s, I'm trying to remember which Marx brother it was. I think it was Groucho. Had said that Warner Brothers was the only studio with any guts. And I think that rings true for a good chunk of time.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I highly recommend you guys check out the Warner Brothers book to kind of get more behind the scenes. Yeah, exactly. That one right there, guys. It's an excellent, excellent book about the history of the brothers. And then I haven't read it yet, but I'm going to recommend the Hollywood Hates Hitler as well, because Chris is a great guy here. And like, as you could see, great researcher too. All right. So with that, let's kind of discuss the film itself and talk about the plot. What are your thoughts on the plot? And if you could rate it on a scale of 1 to 5, what would you give it?
Well, the plot I think is perfect. I mean, so that would be a 5. I mean, it's timely. So, I mean, 1941, summer of 1941. So it's, you know, the timing is really essential on this, because it comes out before we are attacked by Pearl Harbor. We're still an isolationist country. And it was not an easy thing to go out on a limb against the Nazis. I mean, there was a big pro-Nazi movement in our own country. So movies like this were also kind of a dangerous thing. So I think the plot is great. And I know in Vincent Sherman's memoir, he says that the great journalist William Shirer, who had been covering the rise of the Nazis from Europe, had seen this and said that, you got everything right. I mean, all of these things are happening in Germany, and this resistance, you know, these secret radio stations, the intimidation to stop them, you know, the bullying, you know, the murdering political enemies, all this kind of stuff. He's like, right, yep, right. That's all happening. So if anything, Warner Brothers was, of course, you had the production code, right? So you couldn't be super explicit, but I think within the strictures of the code, It's a pretty, I mean, it's a movie that still smacks you across the face when you watch it today.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with you there. I also gave it a 5. You know, I love the kind of the strained relationship between Eric and Kurt. I thought that was a really interesting aspect of the story, you know, because Kurt, he's a full-fledged Nazi and Eric is leading the underground. So I love that dichotomy they got going on. But I also like, too, how we're kind of following Kurt along and kind of his progression of becoming part of the underground and just how he has to decide, should I save my family or should I, you know, follow my patriotism? Right. So I love that.
He's coming to terms with radicalism, right? Like he's realizing that this, you know, even in the beginning of the movie, his dad's like, well, you know, you're young and you've got all these ideals. But, you know, he makes a really important point where he's like, there are no winners in a war.
Right.
And we see that by the end, right? He realizes that. And that's, yeah, it's, you know, and that it also makes it kind of relevant today too, right? With a lot of talk about radicalism today. And, you know, we probably all have some of those crazy friends or family members that your movies like this might hit a little too close to home.
Right. No, absolutely. And, no, I just love too that, because a lot of times when you think about World War II and whatnot, you don't really think about how if there was really an underground going on in Nazi Germany, because I'm certain that that was also going on there. You know, not everyone was going with the flow, right? So I love that aspect and that little glimpse too into it.
Right, that's true. I mean, it also refuses to allow us to see Germany as this kind of one size fits all, everyone there is bad, right? There, it reminds us that there were some people there that maybe thought the Nazis and the direction they were going was maybe not so great.
Right. And we'll kind of talk about this more in acting so we can move on to that. But what I love too is a lot of the cast members who are actually German were very adamant anti-Nazis too.
Yep.
Like one of them, I think his name is Martin Kozlek, who plays Colonel Heller. He was like on this Gestapo's list of like, this is a guy to look out for and to, you know, hate and stuff. So I thought that was interesting too.
Right. And that's a fascinating part of just Hollywood by 1941, by 1940 and long before that, it was this kind of a safety net for the, you know, Europe's talent. I mean, people in all the entertainment industries were bailing and fleeing and coming to Hollywood. And there's a great book on Salka Viertel, who had was kind of this conduit into, you know, from Europe and into Hollywood. And she had a home in Santa Monica where people would always stop. And it's called the Sun and Her Stars. I'm forgetting the name of it now, but anyway, Salka Viertel. But right. They, you know, a lot of the cast, some of these people really aren't acting, right? I mean, they're either, you know, really there's like afraid, or they are just imitating something they saw before they left home, which is, you know, even sadder. But you're right. I mean, they are playing something that they lived in one version or another.
Absolutely. And let's go ahead and move on to acting then. What are your thoughts on the acting?
You know, that's interesting. I was thinking about that, and it's like, I mean, so it's a B movie, right? You have these, you know, kind of not big actors. They're still, I mean, the B unit is usually going to be, I mean, it's kind of like the development leagues in national sports, right? You have these people that are in there and you want, you know, want them to get some experience as they go up. But, you know, one thing I noticed that when rewatching this movie, I was thinking, well, the acting's probably going to be crappier than I remember. And it really wasn't. I thought it was just fine. I mean, it wasn't anything like overly amazing, but it was also a lot better than I had remembered. And the plot remained, I mean, the plot in and of itself is captivating, but I think they did a really good job channeling. I mean, this is also why like Casablanca works so well. You have a lot of these, you know, a lot of these people that were in it, you know, lived this. So their passions they're channeling in this movie are very, very real. So it's one of the things I realized going through this again, thinking that, oh, B movie, it's going to be, you know, I might be a little disappointed in something. And I kind of wasn't.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to disagree with you there. I gave it a 4 out of 5. I thought it was excellent acting, especially Jeffrey Lynn as Kurt, he played a very good, complicated character and a conflicted character too.
And because he has to change the most throughout,
right?
So he has this.
He has this a great arc. Character arc, absolutely. I wish we saw a little bit more of Philip Dorn as Eric, because the way, at least from what I remember, the film presents itself, he's the main character, but it's actually Kurt who ends up being the main character. And I wasn't a huge fan of that. I wanted to see more of Eric because, you know, what led him to deciding to start the underground. And I would have loved to seen a little bit more with him.
That's true. That's a good point. I mean, yeah, because the that trajectory is just as interesting, right? You know, why, you know, what was the last straw for him during the rise of this party? I mean, and they could have fixed that with a few lines of dialogue, too. I mean, you could have explained that. But again, right, these movies are made quickly and cheaply. So I mean, there's certain things, but you know, and that was Warner Brothers, right? These 90-minute movies that were just short and punchy. But I agree. And I agree with your 4 out of 5, because it's, I mean, it's still some unpolished actors, but it's the passion was there, right? So it's like it's like almost great.
Right. No, absolutely. You can tell, especially with the German actors, they were really showing what they experienced, and I really, really liked them. Especially Martin Kozlek as Colonel Heller. He was a really good antagonist to the story.
Absolutely. You know, after a while, you feel like you're watching a documentary, right?
It almost does feel like that, really. Because, you know, like in Casablanca with Conrad Veidt, you know, he's a good villain in that, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, just like how Colonel Heller was like, you know, you got to find them there. And he's like calling all the Gestapo out. And it felt very realistic.
Right. And this really, I mean, is because Casablanca is also Warner Brothers. I mean, this is really a must-see precursor to that movie that, you know, I think people, you know, and maybe even just younger generations, like it's important to maybe see this movie along with Casablanca to see kind of this trajectory. But very similar, where you have people in both movies, right, mirroring and mimicking and engaging in things they've actually lived through.
Right. No, absolutely. I put this on a double feature with Casablanca.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's move on to directing. What were your thoughts on the directing of this film?
Great for me because, I mean, there's Vincent Sherman is kind of a perfect Warner Brothers director where he works really well with their house style. So, you know, like a Mervyn LeRoy or like, you know, any other, you know, Michael Curtiz or any of these guys that are really good at these, making these tight narratives that just march along and keep you engaged and they don't hang on anything too long. And, you know, I know a part of that is, you know, Warner Brothers tried to keep costs down, you know, and I've seen memos of Jack Warner giving directors grief for like, you know, how much film are you going to use on this? Can you start editing it now? But at the same time, that was a, you know, that was a style that worked so well at the studio. And I think even with, like we were just talking about before, there's things that, you know, with a slightly longer movie we could have used. You know, it's still such a good, fast-paced, engaging movie. And I think it was staged very well. I mean, there was, you know, they used the Nazi imagery against them very well, right? And depicting how, you know, thinking of how it was staged, or even that, you know, at the end where you're getting one of those radio broadcasts and you're seeing like the big looming shadow, or where you have the, you know, one of the Nazi leaders and behind them is, you know, a flag or a logo with the bird right way above them, you know, towering, where it's kind of, it's giving that mentality of like party and state above all.
Right. Right.
And individuals are disposable. And I think, you know, so by 1941, you know, people had already seen Reifenstahl's Triumph of the Will. There was already My 4 Years in Germany, or well, My 4 Years, the Warner Brothers movie, what's World War One, different one. I'm thinking of there was a newsreel, and I'm forgetting the name of it now. But anyway, there's a prominent newsreel going around, you know, so this footage was getting out there. So they were able to utilize that creatively to help make the point of this struggle, and as well as the intimidation factor of the Nazis in the movie.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I totally agree with that. Even though you could kind of tell the limitations of the production, they really did hammer in how scary it was over there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it was showing like people dressed up like Gestapo, like running around the town and whatnot. It felt pretty realistic. Mm-hmm. Even if the scenery was pretty limited, it still felt pretty realistic to me.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I liked the directing too. I gave it a 4 out of 5. Again, I was mentioning, I wish we saw more of the Eric character. I don't know if that was his issue though, Vincent Sherman or not, but again,
yeah, I think this was one of his first movies there. He was probably just given the story. So he was working with, you know, what he was given.
Right. I got to put the blame on someone though. Right. But, but just reading too, I think this film was only made in like 4 or 5 weeks, like an insanely fast turnaround. Like with that in mind, they did a great job with how quickly they had to make this thing.
Yeah. These were factories.
Right. Exactly. Product. Exactly. So, I agree with everything you said there. And I liked how it was put together. It looked really, really good considering all the restraints. It's a B movie.
Right. I mean, it's a B movie. I mean, you go in expecting right. certain things, you know, so it's not going to look like Casablanca.
Right. Right.
But it's still, you know, it's still, yeah, within the, with understanding the restraints, right. And expecting, you know, limitations on sets and things like that. It's yeah. Pretty impressive. Even Absolutely. On the, I mean, this, I'm pretty sure this is a movie too, that hasn't been, you know, remastered. I should talk to my contact at the Warner Archive about this. Cause they already did Confession of a Nazi Spy. I mean, this is another one that really deserves not only a restoration, but it deserves a new audience.
Absolutely. Cause I saw this one on YouTube. I don't think it's on disc or anything as far as I know.
I have a really old disc of it that I found on eBay probably when I was doing my dissertation, you know, a decade ago. So, so it's, you know, and that I don't think is a bootleg because there was some collaboration with Vincent Sherman's family, but I'm sure it was a limited release.
Right. Right. No. Yeah. We definitely need to tell Warner Archive then. I think that'd be awesome if they could do a release of this.
I will fire off an email. Well, and actually once this goes up, I will then get link this and use that in my email.
Yes. Yes. That'd be awesome. Well, we're kind of already talking about it now. What are your thoughts on the cinematography slash special effects? Not really any, but.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you know, I'm glad you had sent me the list of things, you know, these things to think about, because one of the things, you know, that's so common in old Hollywood, especially in the B unit, is not a ton of camera movement. But there was some camera movement in this that I noticed, you know, when they would come into a scene and there'd be two people talking and the camera would slowly move in as, you know, the tension rose. I mean, so there was some things that seemed not, you know, that you wouldn't necessarily expect in an inexpensive B movie.
Right.
So I thought it was, you know, I thought the stage, I mean, if we're going to say staging is a part of this, I don't know, but it's, you know, that all seemed, you know, the way that they would, you know, photograph the Nazis, they did a good job, you know, mimicking the way they were projected, you know, they projected themselves. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, if that's part of cinematography, I would guess, because there's lots of, you know, looming shadows, right. You know, the way the Nazis are lit and presented, that kind of thing, you know, all things to make them look intimidating. And as well as kind of like these soulless, authoritarians.
Right. Right. No, absolutely. Especially, there's a couple scenes I'm thinking of right now, like when they're inside with the, I don't remember her name, but the character with the glasses standing in front of the huge like swastika and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. They're in that scene a lot, or in that specific area a lot, just kind of showing
was that,
the
grandiosity. Was that the character who admitted to, is that the one who then killed himself?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. That was a really good scene because he talked about losing, I actually wrote that down, losing the power of thought. He realized right. that he had been completely controlled. And that's, I mean, and again, for June 1941, it's impressive to make that argument in the United States.
Absolutely. So even though, like we were mentioning, it's very limited, it's got some very powerful cinematography for just the simple shots that they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it actually kind of reminded me of like Orson Welles after he, you know, kind of got booted from Hollywood and he was doing, you know, these self-funded movies that were all like still kind of beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, like Trial. And it's like it has some of that feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be part of because they all, and even Vincent Sherman, right? We talked about a lot of these people were essentially refugees from this part of the world. So they're channeling their real passions. But even the director acknowledges this movie as like his interest was that he thought it was an important movie. Even though it was a B movie, it was something he thought he had a duty to make, which is something we see. I mean, that's why Edward G. Robinson wanted to, even though Confessions of a Nazi Spy is kind of a B movie a couple years earlier, and he was definitely an A star by then, he wanted to do this movie because he felt he had a duty to do it. So it was a similar kind of attitude.
Absolutely. One more scene I'm thinking of too, at the very end when we're in the prison, I just loved how that was set up too, because it feels all hopeless and whatnot, but then once they hear the broadcast, everyone kind of cheers up a little bit. Even if they're all going to die, they're still feeling a sense of hope and escape. And I love that.
Right. Well, in that line, like, well, the sun's going to come up. Right.
Exactly.
And,
yep.
And you know, as Eric is walking into the gallows, he gets to do it hearing his brother now taking up the resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Which is so awesome. It's such a great ending to that.
Absolutely. Let's see, were there any other scene? There's just a lot of little scenes like that throughout the film that I really, really enjoyed and really elevated it a lot more for me, considering it is a B movie.
Right. And what it does too is it gives us an interesting sense of time and place. I mean, I feel like I can, having watched this again, you know, like I said, it had been a long time. And last year, I screened The Mortal Storm for some students. And they were, I was kind of surprised, and they were really surprised at how much they like found it moving, because I mean, I presented the whole movie as like, you know, this is before we were in World War II. So this is kind of a courageous movie to make. And that, you know, what we're seeing is what they're talking about. You know, what's interesting about these movies is that we learn about this stuff as like this distant past, mm-hmm. but these movies are made when this was like a headline in the New York Times.
Right.
Like this movie was made by people and then seen by people who were living through this history, which makes it even more fascinating.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's why I love watching these movies, is to kind of get a little glimpse of what it really was like back then. Mm-hmm. 'Cause, you know, I mean, so many of these people from this generation are gone now. So just having these films is a really good time capsule of looking in what life was like.
Right. And that's why I always go back to the great Jimmy Stewart line that movies are pieces of time. And that's exactly what this is, right? We can learn from it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. Let's move on to the next segment, music. What were your thoughts on the music for the film?
You know, honestly, I didn't even really think a whole lot about it.
No, that's all right. I didn't either. There's not really that much, honestly. It's kind of generic.
Being a B movie, it's going to be, you know, whatever they had in stock, they were just going to roll into it here and there.
Right. And because of that, I gave it a 3.5. Just because it feels generic, nothing that really sticks with you, unlike movies like Casablanca or other ones.
Right.
Like if I heard it, I wouldn't be able to pinpoint it.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, same. Yeah, just very standard. It's like just good enough.
Right, exactly. So that may be one of the things where you're like, oh yeah, this is still a B movie, right?
Yep. Well, because I noticed the music supervisor was Leo Forbstein, who was the head of the music department, where I'm sure he just, you know, was like, well, here's some stuff we already have the rights to, we don't have to pay for, so you aren't going to use it.
You know, yeah, sure, exactly. He's like,
real fast.
Ass slap that one in.
Yep.
All right. Well, I know you didn't have yours prepared, but what's kind of your overall score for this film that you would give it out of 5?
It's an easy 4 out of 5, and being, you know, the one point off is just, you know, probably the limitations that it faced, right? I mean, you just only had so much, you know, there's certain things you might have wanted more, you know, so maybe some of the technical stuff brings it down, but everything else brings it, you know, way up.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I'm not going to disagree. I gave it a 4 out of 5 as well. I would still recommend this movie, though, because I think the subject matter is very interesting and can be very relevant, especially today. And I love, too, how it's showing what it really was like back in Nazi Germany during the time. And with all the actors, a lot of them being refugees, like you're mentioning, from this real threat, right? So I love that.
And they mentioned concentration camps by name. I mean, there's some, right. And I've seen some commentaries and stuff where they talk about, you know, well, we weren't talking about that kind of stuff till after the war. It's like, you know, they mention it multiple times in this. And then as well as in Vincent Sherman's next movie, there's All Through the Night, there's also mention of concentration camps. So, yeah, that's also important to point out that these kind of things were getting aired. Of course, there wasn't tons of detail with that, but it's the fact that these things were here. And in this movie, we see people brought to these places and tortured, right?
Right.
So there's it's not just a, you know, kind of a flip, you know, reference. It's, you know, where they're mentioned and then we're seeing that this, at least that this is a place of pain.
Right. Because I think that's what it was at the end, right? That they're at a concentration camp.
Yeah. It wasn't like, oh, where they're going to be sent there to work during the war. It's like, no, they're sent there to be interrogated and then executed.
Right. Yeah. So no, that's another plus in my book. I mean, horrible that happened, but the fact that they were showing, hey, you know, this is a really terrible thing going on there.
Mm-hmm. And again, and in June of 1941, where we're still, and that's, you mentioned my Hollywood Hates Hitler book. I mean, that's why I keep mentioning this time period, because this movie was pinpointed as one of the several dangerous movies that isolationists in the U.S. Senate wanted to hang over Hollywood for trying to propagandize us into war. And, you know, the defense was, and Harry Warner, among other studio moguls, but Harry Warner defended his studio and industry brilliantly in front of the Senate subcommittee. And, you know, this movie, you know, when you watch it, I mean, you can look at it, you know, I guess on one level as a propaganda film, but it's also, it's depicting things that were happening, right? These were stories in the newspaper. People were fleeing that part of the world and bringing those stories here. So they're not making things up and trying to paint them as something they're not, right?
Right.
The world as it is.
Right. No, I love that, because if it were more of a propaganda film, I guess it would show even more horrors, or the opposite way, it would show, oh, they're not so bad. Like, but no, that's true.
Confessions of a Nazi Spy feels more like a propaganda movie than this one, just because there's those long scenes of a narrator just kind of hammering how much, you know, we should hate the Nazis.
Yeah.
He's not wrong, but you know, it feels a little heavy handed at times, but even then they were adapting from a trial in New York. I mean, that was a real thing that happened. So again, just engaging in the world at hand.
Absolutely. Let's see, anything else? So I'll add too, I just love the conflict that Kurt goes through with deciding, should I go with my patriotism or should I go with my family? I think that's something any one of us really could relate to. I love that.
Yeah, that's an important point, that they humanize the struggle. That is something as old as time. And, you know, we live in polarized times right now. So, you know, there's a lot of relevancy to, you know, we all have seen people or know people that are caught up in their ideals or you know, one radical idea or another, and seem to lose sight of everything else as a result. And that's what happens in this movie, or that's when we meet Eric. That's the thing, you know, everything is worth it for the country, right? And then he starts to see the ripple effects of some of this stuff. And, you know, as soon as it hits home, maybe it's not so great. And so that's a good story too, to teach us about, you know, not losing sight of the impact of our actions.
Absolutely. And I'd add on to that too, that any one of us can be swayed into something like that. You know, if we're not careful, we could be swayed just like the Nazis, right? So
These people all started as regular people. I mean, they weren't anything special,
right?
And it just happened to happen there the way it did. And One other thing I thought, there's some similarities in this movie to the Mortal Storm from MGM. So much so, like in the beginning, it almost felt a little bit like a ripoff of the Mortal Storm, and then went in another direction. But that whole thing in the beginning, where you have this family conversation and this discussion, where you know some people are on board with where everything is going, some aren't, and you've got the old wise man making, you know, nobody wins in a war, is very similar to the early scenes of the Mortal Storm. But of course, this definitely still becomes its own movie. But both of those movies make similar points. I mean, you have this, they show the struggle as not necessarily just being this overarching story of an entire country, but one that's made up of a bunch of little stories,
right?
You know, everyone's own life. So I think they both do a really good job of that.
Right. I have yet to see Mortal Storm and Confessions of a Nazi Spy, but I definitely want to.
Ooh, yes.
Just to add on to, you know, what I've been studying here. So yeah.
Well, and both of those fortunately have been restored by Warner Archive. So there's beautiful Blu-rays of those available.
Yes. No, they're great. I love that they pick movies that are either lesser known or like these ones are impactful and still relevant.
Yep. Yeah. Important movies that people should see.
Absolutely. All right. Well, any last thoughts about Underground that you wanted to mention to the public?
I think I got everything out that I was thinking of, basically. I mean, yeah, I think it's a great movie that is both of its time, but also kind of timeless, because it's about coming to terms with radicalism and the deleterious effects of this kind of thing on our, you know, communities.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks again for coming on, Chris.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And before we go, why don't you kind of tell people where they can follow you and a little bit about yourself again as well?
Sure. Yeah. So the book Warner Brothers, again, here, I'll do the shameless.
Yeah.
On, you know, social medias, you can search me on Facebook, on Twitter at Chris Yogerst, and on Instagram and now TikTok at C Yogerst.
Ooh, awesome. And I'll have links to all of that down below. And also make sure to check out our episode where we talk about the Warner Brothers book. Again, it's an excellent, excellent book. I highly recommend it.
Thank you.
And with that, thank you all so much. This has been Really Old Movies. I'm your host, Harrison Scullin. This is my guest, Chris Yogerst. Take care.